will come to order. It's 3:25 PM on Friday, February 26th. With us, we have Representative Book, Representative T. Wilson, Representative Lynn, Representative Newman, and myself, Chair Olson. We have a quorum to conduct business. Please turn off your Blackberries or cell phones if you have any, or be prepared to buy us bagels next week. First item on today's agenda is House Bill 245, licensing for optometry. Looks like Casey Schroeder Hotch is going to be carrying it, and staff to Bill Thomas, who's in another committee right now, probably finance, just guessing. So we won't be waiting for Bill. Thank you, Casey. Please identify yourself for the record.
For the record, Casey Schroeder Hotch, staff to Representative Thomas. Thank you for hearing House Bill 245, licensing of optometrists. Currently, Alaska has three different levels of licensing for optometrists. There's basically low, medium, and high. And the Board of Optometry would like to get rid of the bottom two and just have the highest level as the only license you can get. Students graduating from optometry school now are already graduating with the credentials to get the highest level. And most of the optometrists already licensed in Alaska have upgraded their licenses to the highest level. Optometrists who have not upgraded their license would be issued a restricted license, and it would just basically allow them to continue to practice but not exceed a level that's commensurate with their education. It also allows for a retired license, which brings optometrists in line with pharmacists and medical people. Most other states have already implemented similar legislation, and this brings Alaska in line with those states so that everybody is on the same page and we're not getting people that can't be licensed in another state. If the chairman would like, I can briefly go through a sectional.
Oh, certainly. I thought you were going to get off on that one, didn't you? I'll let the record reflect we've been joined by Speaker Chenault.
Section 1 outlines the educational requirements required to be licensed in Alaska. You can't be disciplined in another jurisdiction. You have to pass a written exam. You have to have proper coursework done, completed for pharmaceutical agents and an injections course, and then other coursework that may be outlined by the board. Section 2 allows the applicant to retake the exam if they fail. Section 3 deals with licensure by credentials. You have to have a license from another jurisdiction that has similar requirements as Alaska. You have to pass a written exam, pass the national exam, and have been engaged in the practice of optometry in recent history in the past 36 months. And you can't have had any other violations in another jurisdiction. Section 4 deals with license renewal. You have to show that sometime in the past 4 years, you've completed 8 hours of continuing education for pharmaceutical agents, 7 hours of continuing education for injectables, and meet other educational requirements as outlined by the board. Section 5 establishes the retired license. A licensee may get a retired license. This does not allow them to practice optometry, and it doesn't have to be renewed. A person can go from retired status to active status if they meet certain criteria based that the board outlines. Section 6 and 7 both just remove references to various different classes of optometry. And Section 8 deals with the restricted license, which allows a person who doesn't want to upgrade their license to continue to practice, but at a level that's commensurate with their education. And with that, I'd be happy to try to answer any questions. I would point out, too, that Jill Matheson is here, and she's the president of the Board of Optometry, so she can answer any technical questions.
Any questions for Casey? I see at least one. Representative Booth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have a couple questions, if I might. Casey, under Section 3 of your sectionals, I hope to have answered a couple questions. The board you refer to that this bill in Alaska operates under is a national board. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Book, it's the State Board of Optometry.
I think his question was the test a national test.
The test. Yeah, there is a national test.
There's a national test. So the bill refers to the board, and the board is the state board?
Through the chair, Representative Book, yes.
Okay. In your review of Section 8, looking at the grandfather clause, could you outline in the bill where that's stated? Or is that caretaken for in the board's credentialing?
Through the chair, Representative Book, the grandfather clause, Section 8, is on page 5. And that whole section there deals with the restricted license. So if you don't want to upgrade your license, and you are currently licensed now, you can still continue to practice, but we're not going to let you do injectables if you're not educated to do injectables.
And this is all based on, through the chair, all based on the effective date of this bill?
Through the chair, Representative Book, yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
How many people do you think that will impact, just approximately? That'll be grandfathered in that won't?
25.
Thanks. Representative Lynn?
Thank you. Would you help me with the word injectable? I assume that means commonly used as a shot. Where would this be? I know I had cataract surgery a couple years ago, as did my wife. Same person did it. But now they injected something here to kind of freeze the eyeball. Are we talking about injections in the arm, in the area of the eye, or what? And what would that commonly be given for?
Through the chair, Representative Lynn, perhaps Jill would be the best person to answer that.
Okay, somebody would mind.
Representative Wilson?
Thank you, Chair. Through the chair. On page 2, where you talk about the applicant fails, they used to be able to take a portion of the test, and now they have to take the entire test. Has the rule changed, or what was your thinking on that? It's on line 23?
Yeah. Through the chair, to Representative Wilson, perhaps Jill would be better to answer that, too.
No problem.
Any further questions for Casey? Thanks again. Jill, could you join us?
For the record, I'm Jill Matheson from the chair of the optometry board for the state. Let's see, I'll take your question first, Representative Lynn, through the chair. There are very few times where an optometrist would use an injection. It would be very rare that an optometrist would actually do the retro, what you're talking about is a retro bulbar injection that numbs the eye. Exactly. It would be very rare that an optometrist would do that under this particular 7 hours injection course. That would be a longer course that they would take to be able to do that. Other common things would be to inject maybe a chalazion, which is a lump on the eyelid, that type of thing. But very limited at this point. The reason why we want it left in there, as far as the injection goes, even though they're not used that frequently, is that we never know if there's going to be something new coming down the pipe that would be an injectable drug, and then we would have it already in our statute to be able to do that when the time came.
Paul,
and so I guess. The injection, that's more typically used for routine cataract and other laser, I guess.
Your routine cataracts and laser injections would be performed by ophthalmologists or their staff.
It'll be ophthalmologists.
Right.
So we're not getting into the difference between ophthalmologists and
Terpore.
Correct.
Right. I was had my eyes done by Dr.
That's
Ford.
Right. Yeah. We're not asking to do any surgery or change our scope of practice at all.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And can you explain to me the difference between an optometrist and an ophthalmologist?
One costs more.
One costs more?
Representative Newman, through the chair. The difference in the state of Alaska is optometrists can let me go back to education. Ophthalmologists go through medical school, and then they do a residency in ophthalmology. So they have an MD. Optometrists go to an optometry school, which is a four-year program with an optional year residency afterwards. And they get a doctor of optometry or an OD degree. Where it splits in Alaska really is at this point, based on the newest legislation that we had passed a couple years ago, is the difference is really surgery at this point. It varies state by state because optometrists are licensed by each state, so they have different privileges based on different states. In Alaska, we can prescribe topical drops. We can treat glaucoma. We can now prescribe oral medications and do superficial injections.
Thank you. And then, so this only affects optometrists and not ophthalmologists, and this is all clarified, just you have your own board. Do ophthalmologists have their own board that works on these issues then?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. And thank you. Sure. And then where I'm just going back to where a graduate is recognized, starts at the bottom of page 2 and goes on to 3, is a graduate of a school of optometry recognized by the board. So that, why did you have to add in there recognize the board? I guess that would probably, I would think, strengthen the oversight on this to make sure that people who are coming in and practicing this within the state of Alaska are all board certified. Is that where we're going at?
That's correct. Currently, I think that's just a wording change, to be honest with you. Changing, I guess I didn't really. It's graduate of a recognized.
But this, the board is recognized.
It puts it into the board's regulations, I guess, instead of statute. There are 13 or 14. I don't know the total optometry schools that the board recognizes. They're in the United States and Canada. We don't recognize optometry schools from other foreign countries because they're not accredited for optometric education in the U.S.
Sure. Do you generally, have you ever turned down, or I don't know how long you've been as the chair or how long you've been on the board, but turn down people who come to the state of Alaska try and be licensed as an optometrist, come before the board? I'm assuming they've always had to come before the board then, of what you just said. Have you ever seen anywhere you've turned them down because it wasn't an accredited school?
Representative Newman, through the chair, I've been on the board for 6 years and we've never denied anyone a license.
So generally they're all accredited schools that have come through, mm-hmm. and they're schools from the United States?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I believe they've all been through the United States. I don't think we've had any students come through Canada.
Okay, are the schools in the United States comparable to other countries, or they have more stringent?
More stringent? Mm-hmm.
Good deal. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Wilson, I think you had an unanswered question.
Yeah, I think she has the answer.
I'm ready for you.
Okay. Through the chair, I'll do it again. I just was wondering why the change between you used to be able to take a portion of the test and now you have to retake the entire test.
Representative Wilson, through the chair. That is kind of a language cleanup. Previously, when the board administered their own test, there was several different parts of the test, and now the board doesn't administer their own test. We accept the national board, so they have to take the national board elsewhere, and then they meet that requirement. So that's really a language cleanup. So there used to be several different parts of that test, and this just got missed.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Representative Book had an unanswered question too, didn't you?
Nope. Through the chair, if I might.
Sure.
Could you give us the makeup of the board as to the requirements as to meetings and as to compensation from the state or anything like that? I'm looking at a zero fiscal note, and I'm looking at if you have to do some looks at grandfathering people in, it's going to take some time for you to do that. And I'm just wondering if this is going to be conducted in a normal routine of business as to how many times you meet and if there's per diem and all that kind of stuff involved. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Boot through the chair. Right now, the board meets, there's five board members, four optometrists and one public member. The board meets twice a year. We meet once face-to-face and once by teleconference. We don't foresee that changing. In fact, I think we might even end up having a negative fiscal note on this. What's happening now is when people come in and when applicants fill out their application, it's very confusing. If you go into the regulations part of it, it's quite confusing to figure out, you know, okay, what do you exactly have to do to get each level of licensure? So the staff members have to, at the department, have to go through a lot of checklists, that type of thing, and I'm, you know, talking with them by email or phone to make sure everything, they've met all those requirements. So yes, initially I feel that, you know, moving people from the three levels and then restricting the others will take some time at that given time. But what's happening now is that the person is issued the kind of the base license, and then we issue them, if they haven't met the requirement for the highest level, they are issued the DPA or the dilating only endorsement. And then after they go back and meet all the requirements or take all the extra classes, then we have to go back and reissue the TPA endorsement. So there's a lot of staff work that goes along with that. But as far as per diems and board dollars, we don't see that changing.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any further questions? Well, thanks again, Jill. Do we have anybody online? Nobody online. Do we have anybody else in the room that would care to testify on this bill? Seeing none, I think we'll close it for public testimony and bring it back to the committee for discussion or anything else.
Mr. Chair, I think it's a good piece of legislation, helps continue to protect Alaskans. I'd like to make a motion to move House Bill 245, version /A, from committee with any attached fiscal notes or individual recommendations.
Seeing no opposition, the bill will move out of committee, and we will take a brief at ease. The second item on the agenda today is House Bill 340. Well, that was a nice title. Municipal sales tax or use tax on motor fuels. Presented, was that an individual bill or a labor and commerce bill? It'll be presented by the staff to both Chair Olson and the Labor and Commerce Committee. Conrad Jackson, please identify yourself for the record, and you've got our undivided attention.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, let me start that again. For the record, Conrad Jackson, staff to Representative Olson. Before the committee today is House Bill 340, an act relating to the municipal sales and use tax of motor fuels. In short, House Bill 340 would put a cap on sales tax at 8 cents. Per gallon per municipality. What that means is a city that is outside of a borough would be able to collect up to 8 cents in sales tax on a gallon of gas. A city that is within a municipality.
That was flat tax, wasn't it? Not sales tax. It's not, it's a flat tax like the
it
state
is,
tax. It's not a progressive tax.
To the chair.
Mr. Chairman, it is the bill specifies that it is their tax. They may tax at a rate that does not exceed 8 cents. So it's conceivable that they could charge less than 8 cents per gallon. So it's a capped tax. There is a cap on it. Cities within a borough may collect the 8 cents. The borough may also collect 8 cents. So the maximum tax on a gallon of gasoline would be 16 cents. At first blush, it sounds a little confusing, but basically any municipality may collect 8 cents, up to 8 cents per gallon. In recent history, we all saw the price of fuel reach record levels. At the same time, municipalities were collecting record high sales tax on a gallon of gas or diesel. This bill does not propose to cap a tax on home heating fuel. It is very specific to motor fuel, gasoline, diesel used on the roadways. Our hope with this bill is to provide some relief to the consumers at the pump when the prices are high. When prices are low, frankly, the municipalities would actually could collect more sales tax than they do under the current percentage scheme that they have in place. And for instance, today, if you went out to the valley to buy gasoline, I haven't been out in a few days, so I can't give you an exact number, but the last time I looked, it was around $3 a gallon. Of that price, approximately 14 cents is sales tax. With the passage of this bill, you would save about 6 cents a gallon on sales tax. I might add that the current sales tax that is charged in various municipalities around the state is on top of just over 26 cents in state and federal tax. And Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I wanted to keep this brief. There's not a lot to it. We have Steve VinSant, the state assessor, that is available. We would have to call him from here and let him know. He's traveling home at this point from work, and if there's specific questions for the state assessor.
Representative Newman has a question, I think, for you.
Conrad, do you have two questions? First off, how does this affect, like, home heating oil, or is this just a transportation fuels tax, or do municipalities also have the ability to tax other fuels?
Representative Newman, through the chair, the bill is very specific. It says gasoline or diesel fuel of the type used in cars, trucks, or other motor vehicles that are driven on roads.
I
guess that another way, in more layman's terms, I guess, might be to say, if you buy it, if you go down to your local gas station and buy through the pump, that's the fuel we're targeting. So if it's delivered to your home to heat your home, that is not the target.
Follow up a couple times here. So Conrad, do you know, do municipalities currently have the ability to tax non-transportation fuels?
Representative Newman, through the chair, I believe all municipalities who collect a sales tax of some sort collect it on all commodities sold, all transactions.
Sales tax, but not a fuel tax.
There are some municipalities, and if you'll give me a moment, I can dig through my list, that specifically charge a tax on the transfer of fuels. There are not a lot of those in the state of Alaska, such as ADAC has a 2 cent per gallon fuel transfer tax. Let me thumb through quickly. I only have a quick note on three communities. I may have missed a couple, but that's all I'm seeing. In addition to a sales tax.
That's fine. I think that might be for bulk fuel farm taxes and, you know, trying to maintain the cost of operating it. But do you have a list also of what taxes or what municipalities currently charge for motor fuel taxes? Do we have that available, Mr. Chair?
Representative Newman, through the chair, the table that I have for sales tax is titled, and it's actually from legislative research, that is the 2008 municipal sales tax. So that again applies to all sales, whether it's at a grocery store for bread, eggs, milk, to home heating fuel, to gasoline.
So the intent of this legislation is just to make it so that there is not a tax on transportation or on home heating fuels or transportation fuels?
Representative Newman, no. The intent of the bill is to cap the tax on motor fuel that you would put in your car or truck, gasoline or diesel, for driving down the road, to cap that at 8 cents per municipality. The target is not home heating fuel or diesel for your boat. That's not the target.
Well, I guess, Mr. Chair, where I'm getting confused is there communities that are charging more than 8 cents tax right now in a combined sales tax plus I'm assuming a fuels tax?
Representative Newman, yes, there are a number of communities. If you'll give me just a moment to flip back to a different page here. As an example, in a community that,
like Mansu,
for instance, charges
if we could just maybe get those charts, Mr. Chair, it'd be good.
Certainly. And again, what we did is we looked back about 7 years, and the negative impact on the cities was for about the last year and a half. Under this system, the cities would have come out ahead in five and a half of the years. It's just the last year and a half when we've had the high prices that the cities have, or would take a slight hit. But at that point in time, again, it was our feeling that the windfall of the high prices wasn't built into their budget, so it wasn't anything that they lost. It was just something that they didn't receive. I know that probably one of our number one complaints, just speaking only for my office, is people calling about, question one is how come we're paying so much more than Anchorage, and a good portion of it is the difference in the sales tax. And then the second question is how come we're paying more than everybody else. And this addresses a portion of that. But then again, I don't believe you have the sales tax out there.
Yeah. Well, that's why I find it interesting, because, you know, when we heard from so many constituents and the popularity of the reduction of the state's 8 cent per gallon road tax, you know, for transportation fuels, for motor fuels.
But one question you raised was on boats. If you pulled into Tesoro Station and filled up your truck and then filled up your the tanks on your 20-foot sled or whatever you're using, that's what we use on our rivers, that gas would be taxed because it came out of the pump. So, I mean, in a way, we're, you know, recreational use. If you filled up a snow machine Tesoro, it would be capped at 8 cents.
That'd be about the, just to make, the only fuels I wouldn't be getting at then are, is if you're delivering it to, like, Mike Chenault's dozer sitting out there on a
You're buying marine fuel.
Yeah, which is already colored fuels and things that they've got, clarifying it. Thanks, and if we get that information, that'd be pretty
good. Certainly, and we've got a couple people online, one of whom is Steve Vinzant. Is Steve called in?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Vinzant is, he works a little different hours than we do down here, and he's actually on his way home. If there are questions from the committee, I can give him a call, and which I'd get him tied in through a cell phone. Otherwise, he had no comments other than just wanting to be available for questions.
It's not my intent to move the bill today, so I mean, we're going to have adequate time to hear from the cities and probably other interested groups. But Representative Wilson?
Through the chair, and just to help Representative Newman, the City of North Pole charges 4% up to a maximum of $8 per transaction. So the break-even point there would be $2 a gallon for gasoline, which I don't think we'll probably see that again. I guess my question is that, you know, have we heard how much impact this will have on budgets of smaller cities? I mean, the City of North Pole is about 2,000 people. They have a sales tax, in which they've agreed upon, and they make a cap per transaction versus per gallon, and they charge on heating fuel and groceries, pretty much almost everything, just a maximum. Have we heard about how much detriment this might be for those types of places?
Representative Wilson, through the chair, no, I have only heard from, just anecdotally from a couple of folks, obviously the letter from the mayor of North Pole. There are obviously a number of communities in Alaska that haven't bothered to weigh in. I would guess, I saw Kathy Wasserman in the audience, I'm assuming she is here to testify on behalf of AML, and will probably give you a number of those communities' opinions. I think that many of the communities in the state, to kind of carry on with your other thought, also have a cap on sales tax. The Kenai Peninsula Borough does that as well. We cap on the first $500 in sales, so you would, depending on the community inside or outside the borough, there is also a cap. This just lowers that cap on that very specific commodity.
Follow-up, sir. Could you tell me what the highest tax that there is in the state on fuel?
I believe that according to the chart that I have in front of me, it is 7% sales tax in Wrangell.
Thank you.
Now, if I could add something to that, there are taxes out in the bush done by non-governmental organizations, be it a tribal council, a village, and in some cases it's several dollars a gallon
for the tax.
But this would not have an impact on them because technically they may not have taxing authority, and we're trying to work our way through that. But a lot of the high prices you see out in the bush are not as a result of the people that are transporting the fuel, but it's the people that are receiving the fuel and then passing it on a retail basis out in the bush. And it can be extremely significant.
Can I follow up with your
comment?
So since they don't call it a sales tax, it's just price of doing business instead.
It's built into the price. The Attorney General's office has been looking at it for well over a year. We could not figure out a way to incorporate that into this bill, but it is being looked at by the Attorney General's office, and it has been for a year. As a aside on that, I believe that the good portion of the people distributing fuel in the bush would even consider coming underneath the RCA, so they had a regulated rate of return, because they're getting blamed for a good portion of the high prices when that's not necessarily the case. And it can vary from village to village on the roads or on the river system. But again, we couldn't figure out a way to incorporate that into this bill. But yeah, there's some, I believe there's going to be a report coming out shortly on that.
And one more question, please. The chair, have you, I mean, as gas keeps going up or cost of living does, is there anything built into the bill that it would just be 8 cents until somebody changed the bill?
Representative Wilson, through the chair, yes, that's the case. At this point, there is no sunset for this change in statute. This would be until the bill or the statute comes before the legislature again for an amendment.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Chenault.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just for clarification, currently our borough charges 3% sales tax on fuel, and so do the majority of our cities. And so if you look at it in the aspect, and Conrad, tell me if I'm wrong, but if you bought gallon currently in the, bought fuel currently in the city of Kenai, it's I'm going to round numbers, so it was 353, I think, whenever I was at home. So I'm just going to say it's 350. So at the price of 350 at 6%, you'd pay 21% or 21 cents a gallon, or under the current taxing system, under this proposed tax system. And this is where I might be confused, but Conrad, the city of Kenai would only be able to collect 8 cents on that same dollar amount. So they would collect 8 cents. The Kenai Peninsula Borough would only be able to collect 8 cents. And so instead of paying 21 cents, you're still going to be paying 16.
Representative Chenault, through the chair, yes, that is correct.
Okay. I've been away from finance for a while. So
just, used to be able to do it.
Just trying to remember. So it certainly doesn't drop it back to zero, but it certainly looks at some of those costs. And I certainly agree with Representative Olson that when my borough puts together their borough budget, they may have a number there that they look at that they think fuel might be at, but certainly when it got up to, I think it was 470 or 485 a gallon, that certainly was never intended to be a budget windfall. And, you know, I think that this just helps the consumer.
I was going to, I think my question may have been answered, but I was thinking about the potential for these municipalities asking for increased revenue sharing. Then they shift everything to the state, and we're the bad guys.
So that was more a statement than a question.
Well, it's would it shift the responsibility to us if there's shortfalls out there, where we could potentially be expected to increase our level of revenue sharing? That's the question.
Well, again, I
think you may have answered the question.
I'm sure that we're probably going to hear from Doug Isaacson and probably Kathy on it, but my guess is since they haven't budgeted for it, or they budgeted at the last year's amount, that technically it's not built into the next year. I mean, nobody was foreseeing that. I think in our case, I think briefly it got up to $4.99. Again, I mean, that's a pile of tax. That's a windfall. It wasn't, they weren't planning on it. It wasn't built in the budget. So have they lost it? They lost the possibility of getting it, but since it wasn't built into the budget, it's not, it's not a loss. It'd be, well,
I don't.
And you don't have a sales tax, so you're fortunate. I mean, a lot of people tank up in Anchorage just for that, I've seen people going back and forth with 5-gallon jerry cans, and I'm just glad they're not behind me or in front of me when they're driving the Seward Highway home. But I've seen people with 60 or 80 gallons of gas and 5-gallon cans to save the sales tax.
Those cans are expensive, though.
Not if you use them over and over again, I guess. But any further questions for Conrad? Representative Newman?
No, just on Representative Lynn's point, I think we'll probably hear from Kathy and some of the others about the, you know, in the state, I think it was Representative Lynn was talking about the state backfilling some of this and about how they currently have requests in to get reimbursed from the state now for the $150,000 exemption on senior housing and
it's the same veterans. Question, basically.
Yeah.
Representative Booth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Getting back to some of the original dilemma that the consumer faces, we really have no adequate mechanism in place. When a former governor forgave a tax, the day after that, September of 2008, I believe it was, the taxes went down, or the price of fuel went down 3 cents in Anchorage. The following day, it went up 4 cents. We have no mechanism by which we can verify whether or not these actually are passed through to the consumer. This looks to me like one mechanism whereby the auditing through the municipalities and cities can be oversight, which seems to me one minor portion of what we can do in the state. So I appreciate the efforts, and but I'm looking for some sort of long-term consumer advocacy here where we can actually see that these are attained and that the intent is followed through. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much, Conrad.
Thank you.
Kathy, do you care to testify before I go off out of the building?
What, have you just got Doug?
Yeah.
Go ahead and take Doug.
Mayor Isaacson, are you with us?
Are you sure?
And thank you, Mr. Speaker, and Kathy.
Please identify yourself for the record, and you've got our undivided attention, Doug.
I appreciate that. This is Doug Isaacson, mayor of the city of North Pole, Alaska. And I appreciate a lot of the dialogue and have modified some of my written comments to accommodate some of what was said. But it's germane, nevertheless, and so I'll read through some of these for the record. And this is just the caveat here. We were just informed of this, and as a matter of fact, Representative Wilson sent it to us while we were in a borough assembly meeting at 11:40 last night, so I appreciate her diligence on this. And I applaud the sponsors and the committee for exploring ways to reduce the cost of living for residents throughout Alaska. But I too question the efficacy of this action for several reasons. One, if you as the legislature are seeking to lower costs at the pump for consumers, why not start by lowering fees charged by the state to the refineries? And as Conrad was just mentioning, this is a complex issue that doesn't always achieve what you're looking for because supply and demand and other market factors, you know, what the people will bear come into play. And so any savings that you hope to accomplish are oftentimes eaten up by what is usual and typical and people will accommodate. Secondly, although you have the right to limit a tax imposed by a local community, should you exercise it and thus usurp the local voters' ability to regulate commerce within their community? It's my belief that the sales tax is one of the few taxes most municipalities have to generate revenues and therefore should be regulated at the local municipal level where the voters have the ability to debate the merits of the tax face-to-face with their elected representatives. That means, you know, how does this affect the budget? What are we spending the money on and so forth? To set an arbitrary limit, which this appears to be, on municipalities is, in my estimation, a slippery slope. I would hope that factual data, the presence of repressive taxation or abuse, or other compelling factors should be used as the basis for the state government's intervention or overruling a municipality's control. I believe it was you, Mr. Speaker, who had mentioned that perhaps in some of the rural communities there is an informal tax that you can't really touch because it's not really there but nevertheless applied, and this will not really get to the heart of that issue. I haven't received calls from staffers requesting information on the impact of this bill, so I was surprised to hear that there were some studies done on this. And later on, here at the end of my comments, I'll even take issue on a couple statements. But I've not heard that the gas station operators have complained to the legislature. And even though I hear all the time people complain about the high tax of gas or high cost of gasoline, people usually vote with their pedal. They drive into Fairbanks and get around the North Pole local sales tax. Fairbanks does not have a sales tax, neither does the borough, Fairbanks North Star Borough. And if too many people vote in this manner, the three gas stations in North Pole would respond either by lowering their prices or complaining to City Hall about a repressive taxation regime that limits their competitiveness. But we are fairly stable on both pricing and taxation and revenues generated. So what is the effect to North Pole or to consumers in North Pole? Well, first, the City of North Pole charges a 4% retail sales tax, as Representative Wilson had mentioned. That's 4 cents on the dollar, and we cap it at $8 per transaction. North Pole has a manual tax reporting that relies on the truthfulness of the company reporting. We are a minimally staffed municipality, and we just can't get out there and perform all the audits we would like to do as frequently as we would like to do it, or put in place perhaps electronic reporting POS systems that would enable at the time of the transaction the monies to be reported or to be sent to the municipality automatically sent to an escrow account, like I hear some municipalities actually have in place. The three gas stations are owned by two entities. PetroStar operates two facilities and Tesoro operates the third, and both PetroStar and Tesoro have a convenience store attached. There is no distinction at this moment in our reporting the sales tax from gasoline, diesel, or bubblegum and pop. Those are combined as far as their reporting goes. There is a distinction due to the separate category in taxing alcohol. Now, as a result of discussions on this, and we've been looking at it before, I am trying to figure out how can we break out gasoline tax. We just haven't figured that out yet with our level of sophistication. Because there is no reporting breakout, and owing to the lack of time to adequately compile numbers for you, I do not know at this moment how significant the impact will be to the City of North Pole. Although while we were sitting here waiting, while I was waiting to speak, I ran some quick numbers, which I'll share in a moment. But we do have a corollary that may be used. From September 2008 to September 2009, the City Council did authorize a sales tax suspension on heating oil. Remember, our retail sales tax is capped at $8 a transaction, and that's equal to a $200 purchase. So whether you spend $200 or $2,000, it's only $8 per transaction. However, a typical fill-up might be on the heating oil, a typical fill-up might be 100 to 200 gallons, which, due to the price fluctuations, could exceed the $200 or $8 cap. Whereas most purchases for fuel, gasoline and diesel, might be closer to the $10 to $20 gallon range and would be considerably lower than the cap. We gauge that by suspending the tax on heating oil deliveries, a monthly fuel delivery with an $8 tax would save the consumer roughly $96 per year, or that is $8 per month. Overall, the city lost approximately $25,000 in revenue during that period. That's not the exact figure. There was no public demand to keep that suspension in place, even though it came during a period of high prices. And we considered it over a 30-day period during two council meetings, and the public just did not show up to say that they really wanted that left in place. So while I was sitting here, I'm looking at our prices, and I would love to have the $3 price that they have in the Valley. Ours is around $3.50, 57 cents, which currently includes about 14 cents in the tax per gallon. So at a $6 savings, and say you get 10 gallons, which my car holds 12 gallons, and I see a lot of trucks filling up 20, 25 gallons, but let's just say they only get 10 gallons maybe twice a week. That's a savings to them of $1.20 a week at 52 weeks. They saved about $62.40 per year per consumer. That's less than what they would have saved with the heating oil suspension. But let's say we magnify that. The Alaska DOT says that traffic counts on Badger Road, where these gas stations are, is about 10,215 cars per day as of 2008, and we've increased our population and busyness since then. So let's say 1,000 drivers a week do this. Over the course of a year, the city loses to potentially loses $62,400 in revenue. And so to Representative Lynn, I would say yes, if there's an impact of that magnitude, we are definitely going to be knocking on your door to ask for more revenue sharing. I would urge you to not do this. To us, it is not a windfall. It is a somewhat predictable amount that we budget each year. And I would say that this is a way for a local municipality and a local population base to regulate commerce and activities and raise the revenues for budget items that they consider necessary for the functioning of their government. I would ask you not to do this unless there's some compelling reason otherwise, and at least get factual data from the affected municipality like ours and allow us to collect that so that you can determine the real impact and the savings that can be had with this. That concludes my comments. Thank you.
Well, Doug, I'd like to clear up one thing. The valley that Conrad Jackson had referenced was the Mendenhall Valley, not the the Matt Valley.
Well, I would like to add the prices of Mendenhall Valley to this. Yeah. Yes.
Any questions for the mayor? Representative Newman.
Thank you. Not just to sit in the valley either, but again, just whether you care to comment or not, Doug, maybe, I hope you do. That sure, I'm glad you got Representative Wilson there making sure you've got this good information so you could testify today. So she's doing her job for you.
Yes, she is. Thank you.
And again, we're planning on keeping this open. We're not closing it out today, and we're looking forward to see what Kathy Wasserman has to add. Thanks again, Doug.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon. My name is Kathy Wasserman with the Alaska Municipal League. Just a little bit of a side note, sir, with all due respect. This ledge research has some misstatements on it. It says that Table 1 lists municipalities, sales tax, special taxes, and revenues from each. And then it says Table 2 lists coastal and river communities. Those are municipalities as well. This whole list are all the municipalities in the state of Alaska. None of these are communities. They're all municipalities. So I'm not sure where, I guess they're just coastal municipalities. But as far as I've ever known, in my community, fuel was sold by the tribal corporation when I lived in Pelican as well. They were not allowed to tax, but they certainly could jack up the price to any amount that they wanted to do. And so it wouldn't have mattered what sort of tax we had on it.
Yeah, I'd like to clarify my statement. They don't know what to call it. Or I think the AG's office had difficulty, but they know that there's a fee put on it that is
and Mr.
Excessive,
Chairman,
excessive in many
right.
cases.
And I would call it almost jacking up the price, but that's my own. So anyway, and that happens everywhere we go, I'm sure.
Not your official position?
Pardon me?
Not your official position?
That's not
just
my
personal
official
position?
Correct, Representative Chenault. Thank you for that help. I owe you one. I called many communities in the last couple of days, and I think Mayor Isaacson forgot to read his e-bulletin because this was also in the bulletin last week. And I called most of the communities that I could and did not find any community that I called, and I was trying not to be choosy, and I did not find any community that was in full support of this bill by themselves. I found some members of an assembly or two that thought this could be a good option for their community, but or their municipality, but no municipalities that were in favor of it. I had many more remote municipalities very much against it, as their fuel prices are very, very high, and they have no way to get those fuel prices down. And if you pay $6 a gallon for gasoline in, for instance, the city of Nome with a 3% sales tax, by the time that gas is sold, you are realizing a 1.3% sales tax. So the city stands to lose quite a bit of money. They also have to fill and realize those high costs as well. So it has a large impact on those cities. However, it could be argued that it doesn't really save the consumer that much per fill up. While we did not have a total consensus among individual assembly members or council members, I guess the main thrust that AML would like to say is that we believe that this should be an option that municipalities are allowed to choose on their own rather than have the legislature make this a blanket thing across the state. I am also not, I mean, I guess I could get into the number crunching, but I won't, and I didn't for these purposes. I'm just basically trying to put across the message that local control, this totally falls under the local control issue that we usually use as our top priority or our top message to the legislature. So thank you, Mr.
Chairman. That's probably the best argument, is that we may be overstepping. But again, we had to get it out on the table, and I'm not jamming it through.
I understand, Mr. Chairman.
And I can name off the first three entities that contacted my office, but I don't want to mention Kenai and Soldotna and the Kenai Peninsula Borough by name. But
do you notice I don't mention anybody name either, sir?
But we're going to be holding it over, and I don't think there'll be any action taken in the immediate future. But we had to get it out on the table because we do have some significant problems, and the bigger one is the taxes that aren't taxes, the right. Taxes that are fees. And I mean, if it's bad enough to where people are thinking about putting themselves under the RCA so they're guaranteed a fixed profit, you know it's got to be bad in certain areas. And again, we even looked at the RCA as far as regulating the price of fuel, and I don't think that's the direction we need to go. But we're looking at a number of options, and this is obviously one of them. But thanks again.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your office was great to work with through this thing, and even though we've come out, you know, quasi against. Thank you. Thank you, Conrad.
That's why we live in a democracy, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Is there anybody in the room that would care to testify? And we don't have anybody online. Well, as I said, I'm going to hold this bill over, and I think we're going to adjourn at 4:22, and I'd like to thank our newest member for keeping her city apprised of what's going on.